Let's jump into it today. There are any number of moments in life that we go through, some of them positive, some of them not so positive, but there are always these certain types of moments, and you know the ones, where you start to realize that the plan is not quite working out the way you thought it was going to. I mean, you know those moments, right? Let me give you an example, and stick with me. Years ago, before 9/11, back when there were not all of the restrictions on flying, I was in Chicago. I'd spoken at a conference, and this was back when we used to, our airline at Axiom was TWA. You call it Trans World. We called it the worst airline, but TWA. And so to go anywhere, you had to go through St. Louis. Well, I had to speak. I'd spoken at a conference in Chicago, and I had to speak the next morning at a conference in Kansas City. The only way I could really get there was to sleep about 3 hours, get on a 5 a.m. flight. Those hurt, okay? A 5 a.m. flight, which means you board at 4:30, and connect through St. Louis and catch that a connection that was actually bound for Phoenix but had a stopover in Kansas City. Okay? You got the plan, right? That was the plan. I make the flight in Chicago. I sleepwalk to my connection in St. Louis. I get on the plane, and I remember distinctly hearing the pilot say, "Ladies and gentlemen, you've boarded a flight bound for Phoenix with an intermediate stop in Kansas City. Our flying time to Kansas City will be about an hour." And at that point, I went into a sleep coma. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. And I never do this, okay? I don't lean my head back on the headrest because have you seen the heads that lean back on those headrests? I mean, I don't do that. I'm one of these sleepers if I sleep. But I just fell asleep. I was gone. And you know how sometimes when you were a kid, when you were sleeping in the car and your parents would exit and like the change of speed would wake you up? You remember that? Or a bump or something? We had like a bump or something like that. And I kind of woke up and I kind of looked, and I was on the aisle seat. I look out the window and we're taxiing. And I thought, man, I have slept through this entire flight. And I look at my watch and it's not been an hour. It's been an hour and 45 minutes. I panicked. I looked back out the window again, and we're not taxiing toward the terminal. We're taxiing away from it. And I thought, I have slept through my stop. And I did the only thing any rational human being would do. I unbuckled my seatbelt and I just started tripping over my words, and I said, "I got to get off." And I stood up, and this guy in the middle seat next to me kind of tries to grab my arm, and I said, "This is my stop. I got to get off." And I'm reaching up and opening the overhead bin while we're taxiing, and I'm trying to get my bag, because in my world there are two kinds of bags, carry-on and lost. And so I'm reaching up to try and get my bag. And at this point, the flight attendant has unbuckled from the jump seat and is headed down the aisle trying to marshal me back into my seat. You never want the flight attendant to unbuckle from the jump seat for you, okay? Let's just get that clear. And she is coming my way, and I'm pulling my bag, and this guy's got my arm, and I said, I really have to get off this plane right now. And this guy, I notice, is laughing, and my row is laughing. But what I started to realize at that moment was the laughter that started in my row is now rippling back and starting to move up into first class. And I look at this guy and I say, "What is so funny?" And he said, "Dude, we had a maintenance problem. We hadn't even left St. Louis yet." Now, that was the plan, okay? The plan didn't, that one didn't work out so well. I got to tell you, one of the things that amazes me is this capacity that God gives us to plan, to dream, to imagine, to schedule, to expect, to hope. God has given us this pretty incredible capacity to do that, and we all have expectations for what our lives were going to be, right? I mean, you remember back in elementary school, you can go around the elementary school room and you can see who was going to do what. I mean, this person said they were going to be a doctor. This person was going to be a rock star, you know. My dream in elementary school, I was going to be an astronaut. I grew up at the tail end of the Apollo era. I was going to be an astronaut. And by the way, 2 years ago, NASA opened up applications for the next round of astronaut selection. I applied. You laugh. I'm going to make them tell me no. Okay? I mean, I still harbor this hidden dream that someday I'm going to do that. Well, then as we get older and we mature and become adults, we start to exchange these childhood dreams with our adult dreams, don't we? You're going to marry that guy or girl of your dreams. You're going to have that career where you have that certain job, that great job where you're going to live out your purpose. Maybe it's the dream to have children. Maybe it's the type of house that you're going to have. Maybe it is, maybe it's how much money that you want to make. It could be anything like that. And the truth is, we all have this picture of how we want our lives to turn out, don't we? And then there was that moment. You know the one. That moment where you realize that life just isn't turning out the way you thought it was going to turn out. Do you remember what it was like in your life? Do you remember that moment? Maybe it was the day you were served with divorce papers. Maybe it was the night you picked up the phone to learn that your child was fighting an addiction. Maybe it was that moment you found out that the dream girl that you were going to marry was not exactly who you thought she was. Maybe it's that moment when the bank calls, or it's that moment when the doctor sits across from you and looks you in the eyes and says, "I've got some bad news." And it's at that moment where we just cry out. We just want to cry out, "God, if you could just do this one thing. If you could just heal my child. If you could just save my job. If you could just repair my marriage. If you could just do this one thing, God." I mean, don't we all have those moments? I mean, let's face it. Nobody ever dreamed they were going to have cancer at age 36. Nobody ever dreamed they were going to be divorced twice by age 40. Nobody ever dreamed they'd be fired at age 54. But nobody ever dreams they'll be depressed and alone by age 30. Nobody ever dreams that they'll have a child in prison when that child ought to be going to college. Nobody ever dreams those things. But every single one of us has an aspect of our lives that hasn't turned out the way we thought it was going to turn out, don't we? Plans fizzle. Dreams fade. Expectations fail. And there are those times when plan A comes to this abrupt stop. And you're not even sure if there is a plan B. And if you believe in God, that might even complicate things a little more, because now you're wondering, really? I've given my whole life to you and this is going on? And I got to be honest, I tire very quickly of the kind of Christianity that thinks that all of this can be explained away on some plaque or a bumper sticker or, Lord help us, on a bracelet or something like that. I get real tired of that kind of Christianity. I mean, let's face it, how do you reconcile those two things? On one hand, you have God, all-loving, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-caring, and on the other hand, you have life that is just filled with disappointment and unmet expectations. And the reality is that we have oftentimes more questions than we have answers. Sometimes we feel completely, absolutely alone. Sometimes we believe, but we doubt. I mean, and that's the point where we start to question God. Because let's be honest, it's hard to be faithful to God when we feel like He hasn't been faithful to us. That gets real difficult. And this is the stuff we don't like to talk about, because we want answers. There's so many things in our life where we want answers. God, why did it happen this way? And I got to be honest with you, friends, if Job didn't get an answer, we're probably not going to get an answer. I mean, let's face it. Job followed God through all of his life and was faithful, and he probably died not knowing all the answers. Every one of us has a choice to make when we find ourselves in these kind of circumstances. Are we going to allow that situation to paint and to etch our view of God? Or are we going to see God for who he really is? And it's in all of this, across all of those millennia of years, that James opens his mouth. And James calls out to us into the reality of all of our plan A's and plan B's. And listen to what he says again. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into this city or that city. Spend a year there. Do business. Make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then it just vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes, and all such boasting is evil. I mean, friends, for all my questions in this Plan B world, I want to share with you one big thing I think that James is reminding us of today. One big thing that I think has two dimensions of that. I think the biggest thing James is reminding us of today is that we must hold our plans loosely. We've got to hold our plans loosely because the simple truth of Scripture is that our God is the God of Plan B. Our God is the God of Plan B. You look through the Bible and you're going to see this play out over and over and over again. Consider Joseph. Joseph has promised he's going to be a great leader. God has ordained it, and the next time we see him, he's not a leader at all. He's been sold into slavery, and he ends up in an Egyptian jail for years. And for years, he lives out Plan B. Ask David. David is anointed king. He is declared king by God. God has anointed him through a prophet. You would think it's a straight shot to the throne for David. But one day he's being anointed, the next day he's running for his life. He's hiding in caves, he's hiding in the wilderness, not just for a day or a night or a week or a season or a month, but for year after year after year, David lives out Plan B before he really is king. Think about Daniel. Daniel is gifted, he's wise. I mean, you would think that Daniel is tailor-made for a leadership position, and he is. He is faithful to God. But he ends up in exile in a strange land, and he ends up being thrown into a lion's den for his beliefs and left for dead. And through all of this, Daniel is faithful. All the while, God is leading him on a Plan B journey. Ask Paul. Paul had a singular plan in his life. Pretty simple. Go to Rome. That's what Paul wanted to do. You see it over and over and over again in his ministry. And for years, he cannot get to Rome. He tries and he tries and he just cannot get there. And eventually, he gets himself shackled and finally moving toward Rome with the authorities. But even then, he doesn't make it to Rome right off the bat because he ends up shipwrecked on an island called Malta. Paul tries, but he ends up on a Plan B journey. Ask Moses. Moses was in this interesting situation. God had a simple two-step plan, real simple. I'm going to bring my people out of Egypt. I'm going to lead them to the promised land. Pretty simple, right? Moses goes into it thinking that. But that's not what ends up happening. Do you know how long it takes to walk from Egypt to the promised land? Do you know how long, how far a journey that is? It takes 2 weeks on foot. Moses, in his entire lifetime, never arrives. He just never arrives. Moses had the map for Plan A, and God sent him on Plan B. The Bible tells us that God sent Moses on what God called the roundabout way. And what James wants us to consider is that God sometimes leads his children in ways that we don't want to go. And that's tough for us, isn't it? I mean, God sometimes interrupts our plan A's, and, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean for us as people when we say yes to God in the middle of plan B? And incidentally, one of God's most irritating qualities, if I can say that, one of God's most irritating qualities to those of us who are impatient people is that God is just never in a hurry. He's just not in a hurry like we are. I mean, you see it over and over. Those of you who know the story of Moses, how long did it take Moses to get to even to the edge of the promised land? You can mumble that again. What? 40 years. 40 years. 40 years it took him to make a journey that should have taken no longer than 2 weeks. Geographically, at least. God is not in the hurry that we are, and, you know, he leads his people sometimes in ways we don't want to go. And oftentimes that's not just a minor detour. It's not just a simple change in plans. Over and over, this happens in the lives of every person who trusts in God. And if you are a Christian, if you are a follower of Christ, you can just about guarantee you are going to spend some time on a plan B journey. You can almost just count it as a guarantee. Everyone is going to log some time on a plan B journey. There are going to be times when your heart is filled with hurt and with loss. There are going to be times when you are so fatigued that even sleep will not refresh you. There are going to be times when you ask God for something, and as best as you can discern, as well as you can envision it, it is a good thing. You're not being selfish, you're not being hypocritical, you're not being any of that, and you ask God for what you think is a good thing, and he still says no. We're all going to log some of that time, and all of, you know, some of us have been there. Many of you are there today. There are plenty of you in this room today who are right there, and I wish I could find words tender enough to convey to you that God has not forgotten you. If you are in the middle of a very long and difficult plan B journey today, I hope I can convey to you strongly enough that God has not abandoned you. He's just not in a hurry like we are. God leads his wholehearted, faithful children in roundabout ways sometimes. But the second dimension of this that I want you to think about, James tells us that we need to hold our plans loosely, and I think one of the big reasons is that God is in control and we are not. Now, this is a tough one for me. This is difficult for me. Listen to the writer of Proverbs. Proverbs 16:9 says, "In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps." Proverbs 19:21 echoes it. "Many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails." In 12 days or so, it will have been 7 years since Tamara and I were at home. It was early. I can't even remember the day of the week, but it was a weekday, and we got a call. We got the call from the Little Rock Police Department telling us that our daughter had been involved in an accident. And, you know, you get all of those thoughts that run through your head. And then they added in just a little tidbit of the story. Yeah, she was hit by a car fleeing police. And so I jumped up, Tamara jumps in the car with me, and we start driving, and I'm going to tell you, I'll confess, I didn't even look at a speed limit sign, okay? And I don't remember much about the drive. I just remember Tamara telling me, "We're not going to be of any help if we're dead, so could you please, please be a little bit more careful?" I don't know. It was just minutes it took us to get from Maumelle. She was working an internship over the summer for Jeff Spry. Okay, you would think working for Jeff Spry, you're protected, right? But, you know, this was when City Connections was down by the airport. She's driving down 6th Street, and this guy who had been stealing copper pipe from the old Job Corps building was being chased by 6 police cars, blew through a stop sign, T-boned her, ran her into a utility pole. The utility pole snapped, fell on her car, and this is what we came up to. This is from, believe it or not, she made the front page of the Arkansas section in the Democrat Gazette, but this is what we drove up to. And I'm going to tell you, when it's your daughter inside the yellow tape, I can't even describe the emotions. And I must have looked awful, okay? I really must have looked awful, because thank God she was okay. Bumps, bruises, soreness, all of that, okay? Car, total loss. And it was a new car, but I'm not bitter. But, you know. But I'm standing there, and I'm just looking. I know I just had to look awful. And one of the first responders comes up to me and says, "Are you okay?" And I thought, I hadn't even been in the wreck. You're asking me if I'm okay. And I said, yeah, I am. And I'm just, you know, the blood pressure medicine wasn't working that day. And he said, "Hey, buddy, look at me. Look at me." And I looked at him, and he said, "We do this all the time. And I can promise you, anyone like your daughter who needs help, we ain't leaving until they come with us." I don't know why I remember that. I think it's because I remember the shift that occurred in me, this very palpable shift in my being, where I went from feeling like I was in control to feeling like I was in pretty good hands. Now, I don't know if you've made that shift in the larger sense of things, going from feeling like you're in control to believing you're in pretty good hands. But I'm going to tell you, James calls out and tries to remind us of that. Do you know what the number one command is in the Bible? It's in there over 200 times. Do not fear. It's the most often repeated command Jesus used in his ministry. Do not fear. Do not be afraid. Now that means some things, right? Because it implies we're going to be afraid. We're human. We're going to be afraid. But it is like Jesus enters our plan A's and our plan B's, and he gets right in our face and he says, "Look at me. I do this all the time. And I'm going to promise you, I'm not leaving here unless you are coming with me." We are in pretty good hands. And we come face to face with the fact that there is a God and we are not him. Because in these moments, God shatters the biggest illusion of all, doesn't he? He shatters that illusion of control. Feeling like that we are in control. Let me suggest one last thing, and this is a hard thing to suggest out of this text. It can be very hard to hear. There's some pain attached to it. But I think it can be very good. And let me just say it like this. Your plan B journey, your roundabout way, it may just be the place where God makes you strong. Where if you will allow him, God will make you mighty in your soul. I want to introduce you to a couple of people, Todd and Angie Smith. And as I introduce you, I want to give you this concept. God is not nearly as concerned with where his people are at this particular moment as he is with who they will be at the end of the journey. God cares about what we are becoming. And when we look at the lives of Joseph and David and Daniel and Paul and all of those other kingpins of faith that we consider them to be, we find that Joseph and David and Daniel and Paul and all of the others were being made very, very strong. Todd and Angie Smith are a couple that I think God has made somewhat strong, not in the ways that you would think. Todd and Angie Smith had 3 daughters. And they found out that they were expecting a 4th child. So you can only imagine
on the way to the ultrasound what Todd was hoping and praying for. You know, he had three daughters. He was just hoping that they would find out they were having a son. What they didn't expect was Plan B. Take a look.
We were all waiting in the waiting room. We got called back in, and they did the regular tummy ultrasound that they do, and pretty much right away, the nurse or the technician who was looking at it got a really concerned look on her face, and she just said, I think I need to call the doctor in here to have him take a look at it. Within about 10 minutes, he just kind of stopped everything, and he looked at us, and he said, your daughter has at least two major things that are fatal. And we were like, you know, what does that mean? I mean, knowing what he meant, but what did you just say?
We just weren't prepared for that at all, and we've never dealt with that in the past and have had, you know, relatively healthy pregnancies. So I was just in shock.
He just really went through how everything was going to be, what the possibilities would be that when she's born, she could come at any time or she could die in the womb. At the most, she would probably take a couple of breaths to maybe living 2 minutes. The best day of the whole thing was when she was born. It was the same day she passed, but it was the best day.
You know, it's a funny thing. The first thing that I said to her was, you don't have to stay here for us. And I don't know why that was the first thing that came to mind. We just wanted to keep her so badly. It was overwhelming in that moment to know that God had let us see her alive. It was just something we didn't think we were going to have.
They have known unspeakable heartache. And if you go through the whole story of theirs, they have known unspeakable blessing as well. But they're outside of these walls, right? We have enough of this going on inside our walls. 3 weeks ago, Eric Stripling stood up in front of you and showed this picture. And he thanked the congregation, he thanked the elders, he thanked a lot of us for walking through this journey that they were having. Can I be real honest with you? Group of elders got together and we went out there to do biblical things with Eric, to anoint him, to pray with him, to be with him, to try and encourage him and Tanya. I think if you ask anyone in the picture behind Eric, I think every one of us would tell you that the truth is we left that hospital feeling better than when we walked in. I did not go there expecting to be blessed. But Eric and Tanya, on a very long, very difficult, roundabout Plan B journey, have been made very strong. To the point where even in their difficulty of the journey, they are blessing. They're blessing to me, they're a blessing to the elders, they're a blessing to any of you who know them. And they'll tell you it's not easy. And here's the thing, that's one story here. We got hundreds others, hundreds more of you who have been going through difficulty and challenge and Plan B journeys, where sometimes you just throw your arms up and you ask God, what, really? But let's not forget, as we close, God himself, Jesus, had his own Plan B journey, because let's not forget, Jesus should have had a straight shot to the throne. But his path was the path of the cross. And that was Plan B. Because in the garden, when sin entered the world, Plan A went out the window. Our God is the God of Plan B. And I don't know where you are this morning, but let me tell you this. If you have not identified with our God in baptism and joined with us to try and encourage and live out your purpose here, there is no better God to serve. He is the one who will walk with you through all of that, through all of your Plan A's and Plan B's. And for those of you in the middle of a very difficult journey this morning, we are not perfect, and if we project that we're perfect, I'm sorry. But we've all been through the plan Bs. And one of the greatest things that God has done is given us a body of people that can surround you and pray for and with you. If you have a need this morning, if you would like to identify with Christ, or if you would like to have prayers offered on your behalf, won't you come now while we encourage you with this song?